Shalom Aleichem, good evening, good night. I want to thank you all for coming out on Chol Moed. Sometimes some people find that that's their Chol Moed fun, to come out and to learn, and some people the Chol Moed fun is to be elsewhere. So I appreciate the fact that that it's our Chol Moed fun to be here tonight and to learn. So what we have, what we're going to do tonight, I want to look at the sugyas on Daf Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, but we'll start really from the beginning of the Brayso on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis to talk about the practical, what we're seeing from that Gemara. What's practical in that Gemara? Now, by way of introduction, most things that the Gemara talks about, or Shulchan Aruch talks about, the fellows who work in the industry, the moichrim, the suppliers, they know what the problems are going to be. So anything that's really clearly a problem is not going to ever make it to the market. They weed it all out in the very beginning. Most of the work that I've done is all post-market. It's all stuff that what you might see when you get to the store. And most of what I have here are that type of stuff. What you would see if you got to the store. Most of the pictures we took in the stores. Like we went around tables in the store and we shoved the guys away and we came with our cameras and our lights and we took our pictures in the store. Okay. If you can get a little bit bigger, I appreciate that. If you can, but I don't, this is not my department. But if it's not, we'll manage. Okay. So, the first thing we need to do, we need to familiarize ourselves with what is a lulav. We know what a lulav is, but there's two key components of a lulav that we have to talk about. And in the Rishonim, the halachas of lulav are about one of two key components. We have the shedra on the bottom. We have it separated on top of the center leaf. You follow that line over there. You can follow that line up. That's the shedra. The shedra, a lulav, scientifically is a leaf, and halachically also the Shamshul Hirsch writes, Pashav Yikra, lulav is a leaf. We call the main thing of the lulav the shedra as the branch, and all those pieces that open up off it, we call those the leaves. We call that, Mark calls it that. The Shem uses those type of expressions. So that's how we're going to talk tonight. So, let's see if it's any better. Okay, we have the shedra. The shedra is a hard, woody type piece. In English, it's a midrib or a rachis. That's the shedra. The other part on top is the tiamis. The tiamis is the key center leaf. The question is, what is the tiamis? The word tiamis means twin, double. Whether it means the doubled leaf, if it means that the seam of the leaf, different shayim use different expressions. That's not our discussion tonight, what the tiamis is. What the meaning of the word is. The tiamis is that center leaf over there. This leaf over here, this is the tiamis. That's the center leaf. It's not always easy to find. Sometimes on a lulav, you can see where the shedra ends, but where's the tiamis? So that's where the shedra ends, but where's the tiamis? Some lulav have two tiamis. They talk about in the Paiskim, they have two. But here we go. Find the shedra, find the tiamis. This is a double tiamis, and so now we're on the same page. Now we know what we're talking about. We have what the shedra is, the tiamis. All the shayim are talking about the shedra, the tiamis, the shedra, the tiamis. They're talking about one of these two things. Before I get to the sugya on Lamed Beis, I want to talk about the Mishnah. There's one detail in a Rashi on the Mishnah that's very often overlooked. It's very often overlooked, this one detail in the Rashi. We spend a lot of time, a lot of effort on choosing our minim and using them somehow gets neglected. There's a Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the last words of the first Mishnah, lulav sheish bo shlosha tvachim, lulav has to have three tvachim, dele na neyaboy, in order to shake it, kosher. Now Rashi says three tvachim. Yeah, let's see. Rashi, Mefarshi Gemara. It's quoting Gemara, but Rashi says it clearer. And anyway, Rashi was first, so I can talk about it already. Shloisha tvachim tehei shedra keneged arkei shel hadas. You need three tvachim of shedra to line up equal to hadas. The tefach yoyisik dele nanea. That's what the Mishnah means. Add the three tvachim plus one tefach. What's the point of that? So the Mishnah Berurah says, the Mishnah Berurah says that the top tefach of the shedra should be clear of anything of rings of hadas and maravis. All that should all be below the top tefach of the shedra. It should be below the top tefach of the shedra. Very often you come to shul and you find that people, you'll see all over the place, people have their lovim arranged all nicely, but the hadasim are way up, the knots are way up. And Mishmur says that that's not the right way to do it. You better have it like this. What you should do is, obviously, fix that. What happens if you don't fix it? So, my Rebbe Reb David, David Feinstein of MTJ, he wrote in a Koivitz many years ago that this din that you have to have the tafach of the shedra open is not a halacha in the kashrus of the lulav or in the use of the lulav. It's halach in igud. And how are you supposed to tie your lulav? We had before machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Chum whether lulav tzarach ege, lulav ein tzarach ege. Chum holds lulav ein tzarach ege, but still it's a hidden mitzvah zekel vaveyu to do ege on your lulav. That mitzvah, the way to do it is that since not, the top tefach of the shedra should be free of knots and unblocked by the hadas and the rabbis. So that's the right way to set up the top of your shedra. If you don't set up your shedra that way and there are knots, or your hadas and rabbis come up to that area, you yotze the mitzvah. You're just wearing yotze the hidden mitzvah of lulav tzarach eged, or kuntacham, that the hidden mitzvah of eged. It's not a major thing that you're not yotze, but just why you do it properly chatchila, the way it says in the Gemara and the way it says in the Mishmura. Okay. We go to the Braisa. So the Gemara starts with the in the Mishnah. The Mishnah says Nitam Raisha, Amar Huna, Rashanu Ala Nitam, Ava Nizdak is Kasha. Now, Nizdak, what is Nizdak? That's a whole discussion. We're going to get to that. The Gemara deals with that. But first, let's see what Rav Huna said. What's Nitam? The love tops are all different types on tops of the love. The tips of the love is all different. There's so many varieties. It doesn't pay to explain any of them. Most varieties of love, you're not going to have niktam. It's not possible under normal natural circumstances to have a niktam. The luv can fall, it can get banged. And a regular luv, not the way a fancy luv, a regular luv can fall and get banged. It's not going to become a niktam. Very rarely it will become a niktam. No, you wait for that. That's the average standard luv. It's not normal that it's coming to Tam, but like you're saying over there, that it does come once in a while. We have this is a picture I took in the store. I actually, that was the same day I spoke here in Mosaic at PTI, that I gave a share on this like this on the Abinim, and then I went over there and took this picture. That's a not a good quality lulav. We think we found it laying on the floor of someplace, but it's clearly a niktam. So it's not a typical thing to find on a lulav a niktam. But what is more likely to find is something like this. We have a lulav that has a very sharp point. Today that lulav is kasha. That lulav will remain kasha until the first day of Hashanas. As soon as you go around with Hashanas and you bang the lulav into somebody else's talus, that tip is going to come off. And then you have a niktam, according to those shittas that we went through Rishayna, but the machlokes is whether all these halachas are dependent just on the scent of tiyemis or all the top leaves or rave of leaves on the lulav. So whatever. But anyway, if it's a problem with the tiyemis, that tiyemis is going to come possible. Let's look at this one here. Follow the bar. The top hif where the bar is, the top of the bar is not lulav. The top of the bar is not lulav. That is kara. Kara is the brown paper-like substance that grows on the outside of the lulav. Is like a shell, sort of the lulav. It grows outside the lulav, and it eventually peels off. It dries out, it peels off, it blows away in the wind. And that brown there is kara. It looks a lot like, it could be part of the lulav, But if you look carefully, you'll see that as far as the top half, the top of the line is kara, and the bottom of the line is the lulav. But that lulav is also pointy, and that tip is going to come off. When you bang it into something, it's going to get caught on something, that tip would come off. So what kind of lulav leaf do you want? So we'll talk later. Later, towards the end, there's pictures of what's the ideal top of a lulav. There are pictures later about that. The ideal tops of lulav, they're common enough to be able to find them. They're usually perfect, sealed, closed. They'll stay closed the entire Yom Tov. Very little can ever go wrong with them. We're going to get to that later, though. Right now, I want to go to the Braisa, and I want to talk about the cases in the Braisa one at a time. I'm not going to go in order, because some of them take longer to talk about, so we'll save those for later. Here we have Tanya Lulav Kofof, Kovat, Saduk, Akum, Doimilamagal, Apostle. The other case, Apostle. Chorus is Apostle. Doimilacharis is Kasha. So we're going to talk about first, I think, Kovat. Kovat is a short discussion. What do we have here? Every Lulav that grows on the tree, the bottom of the palm tree, the top half of the branch, as we call it, the top half has where the leaves are, and the bottom half has thorns. Every lulav is that way. Every lulav grows that way. So what I used to think was that the Parshat and the Gemara is that if you took the lulav with the bottom, then you're in trouble. But why would a person take that part of the lulav? Doesn't have any leaves on it anyway, and the Bialacha, we'll have to come to this again later, but the Bialacha discusses that maybe only the area that has leaves is counted towards the four tvachim. Whatever doesn't have leaves on it, so you take your shed, your lulav, and you pull off a few leaves from the bottom because you want to use them for rings, and now you don't have four tvachim covered with leaves, according to Bialacha, you may not be yoitza. So why would a person cut that part? Use that part of the lulav. There's never any leaves down the part which has the thorns. And as I think about it, I look again at Rashi, and Rashi says something else. Here, this is the Rashi. Kavat sheyotzim b'shedra shaloi uktzin k'min koytzim. Rashi repeated himself. Rashi says sheyotzim b'shedra shaloi uktzin k'min koytzim. If Rashi meant with thorns, he should have said thorns, koytzim. We know what koytzim are, and we know what kavat means. Kavat means a thorn. So why do we have to say it? Rashi's not talking about those thorns. Rashi is talking about something else that I've seen on the lulavim. Never on something in the store, but I've seen it on the lulavim, like growing in parks, and they have these displays and they put up things. And I tried looking around to find a picture of it. You know, I saw this maybe 15 years ago, 18 years ago when I saw it, before I thought of taking pictures, before I really walked around with a digital camera. And I looked around the last few days and I couldn't find something along the lines of this, but there are lulavim that have, instead of having thorns, real thorns, nothing to do with that, on the shedra, along the back of the shedra, like Rashi says, sheyotzim b'shedra shaloi, along the shedra of the lulav are bumps, prickly bumps. I'm not sure if it's a specific min of lulav, it's a certain type of lulav that have these bumps, or if it's just an aberration, that's something wrong with those lulavim, but there are lulav that have bumps along the shedra, and they have thorns, not the big thorns we saw earlier, not the big, those big thorns, but like prickles. So, okay. So that's, we covered thorns. Thorns were the easy one. Now we're going to get up to knepples. Knepples, the next line in the braisa, we're going to talk about is kofof. What does kofof mean? So, this kofof actually says kofof ka'akmoy, which is a real turn, a real bend. And then there's, right, which the poskim say, the mechaber brings in Shulchan Aruch, that means if the shedra is bent. The shedra of the lulav is bent. But the Arishayinim, the Mishmur brings the Arishayinim that say, we're not talking about the shedra, we're talking about the tiyamis. When the tiyamis is bent, then that's a pretty common thing, to have a tiyamis which is bent over, really twisted. We call that in English, so let's go back, we call that in Yiddish, the knepel. What does knepel mean? Just, you may as well get something out of this. What does the word knebel mean? You talk about the knebel of the lulav. What does the knebel mean? So the word knebel is the Yiddish word for knot. Or in this case, probably more means like gnarled or something twisted. Now, there is a Yiddish word knebel, which is a button, because poor people couldn't afford gold buttons. They used leather tied in a knot to make their buttons. So the word became to mean buttons also. But a knebel is a knot. So what do we have over here? We have a few lavim. Each one of these is different. There's A, which is nice and bent over. That's a real bend. And you have B, which is a little bit, you know, it's fancy, but it bends. Even though it goes up a little bit in the end, it goes up, but it bends down. And then you have the end again, C, which clearly bends down, even though it plays around over there, it goes up again. But these are clearly knepels. What do you do with a knepel? So the Ashrayim that say that they prefer knepel lulavim, they like them better, they're more mahudr. Why are they more mahudr? Because a knepel lulav can never unwrap, can never split. And the biggest problem facing the Ashrayim was a lulav that dried out and split. That was a very common problem in those days. The lulavim took weeks, months to be sent up to the colder northern countries, and that was something I had to face. The lulav was twisted on top, you knew it couldn't be opened. So, but the Mishmur though advises against it. So today the Chassidim prefer lulavim that are knepled. They look for it. They like it.
It's early, not you. Hello.
The Chassidish people like the knepel because Mechaber prefers it, and the Litvish people try to avoid it. They try to avoid it because Mishmur didn't like it. Let's look at these lulavim. Yeah. Here we have different things. These don't bend out a little bit. What would you say about these? Would you call these knepled? What would you say? These are questionable. They're not really questions. You look carefully, you can see the first one over here. This is clearly a knepel. This one too. This is the same loop from the other side. It looks to me that these would be knepled. I would say that according to the Mechaber, these are fine, but according to the Mishmura, you're better off not taking such a lulav. Now, what's with this fella? It twists, it turns, but is it a knepel? What would you say? That one. They twist and they turn, but they don't bend down. That's not a knepel. So you maybe over here you can get the model of the mechaber that it can't split because that twist is going to hold it in place. It can't split, but it's kasha the kuli alma, so it's not going to be a problem according to the Mishmura. It may not be the type of lulav you can show off proudly into shul and walk around, you know, showing here's the lulav I bought and I paid $50-$60 for. No, that's not the kind of thing you can show off. It doesn't look aesthetically pleasing, but kasha would be. Off the topic for a second, how important it is to buy a lulav that you can show off in shul? Motzi Yom Kippur, what are you thinking about? So the answer is, it's very important. It's a Rashi in Yuma. The Gemara in Yuma says that in Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol read three parashiyos in the Beis HaMikdash. As part of that vote, he read three parashiyos. Two he read from a Sefer, and the third one he read by heart. After the Kohen Gadol finished reading the third parasha, everybody went home and brought their own Sefer Torah to the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara says, "Lahazis chazusa biram," to show its look, chazusa, the way it looks, biram. And Rashi says, "Is in yezek kelim manveyu," to show off to other people how much effort you put into doing your mitzvah. So if you wrote a Sefer Torah and it's beautiful, it looks nice, it's a mitzvah of zek kelim manveyu to show off to other people how much effort you put into your mitzvah. So on Yom Kippur, in the Beis HaMikdash, that was a break in the avodah where everybody had time to go home, get their Sefer Torah, and show it off to their friends and neighbors how much work they put in to get their own Sefer Torah. I understand from here that if you put a lot of effort into your lulav, I mean, I'm not going to walk around shul bragging and saying, look, but there is a concept of zekei laveyu to show people, to demonstrate that you put effort into preparing your mitzvah. It's a Rashi and Yuma. I think it's Ayin Aleph. Is it Ayin Amar Aleph or Ayin Aleph Amar Aleph? It's towards the beginning of the parish. Okay, so I told you, so this is, we saw these already. Yeah, I told you, these are the types of lulavim that you want to aim for. these types of leaves. You have A, B, C. A is the least common, but it's around all over the place. This is the perfect lulav. It looks beautiful. That round back of the tiyamis, I've never seen one that was possible. I've never seen a nizdak, I've never seen a hemnik, I've never seen anything wrong with that tip of a lulav. That lulav tip, I've never seen anything wrong. It's available, it's common. You get a lot of them on the Ella Rishulavim, you get them on the Deris also. It's beautiful. We'll stay put the entire Yom Tif. You get such a lulav, you don't put it down. Even if you don't need it for yourself, you pass it on to your best friend, your chavrusa, your father. This is the kind of lulav that you get in the store, you take it. That's A. B is sort of the same thing. It's a little less aesthetic, but it's going to last. C has a little curl in there. The artist drew this one a little bit too much. I would have cut that little bit over there off. And, well, let's pretend just the white part is the leaf. This is pretty common. This is a good lulav. It looks nice, and it will stay the entire Yom Tov, and there's no question of the kashrus at point any shita. In real life, I only have two of these pictures, though. I thought I took all three, but I only have two, and I only found two. Here you have them. You have this one, that was the A before, that's B, and they're out there. They're all over the place. And these lulav will last you the whole Yom Tov, and nothing will go wrong with them. Okay, now we get to our favorite topic. Go ahead. No, I don't think so. Maybe the way the artist drew it over there with a little bit too much, I would have cut that tip off. But I don't know how to do that on the on this.
What is the one that doesn't bend that way, but it's so wavy?
Oh, we're gonna get to those later. I have one coming up pretty soon. I thought I was gonna go back for you, but yeah. Okay, so my favorite topic is hemnik. Why is my favorite topic? Because there's a tremendous amount of research in it. What is a hemnik? So there's two words, hemnik, and we use them interchangeably. They mean two different things. But most people just use them as if they meant the same thing. Let's look at the Gemara about hemnik. Actually, I don't have the Gemara, I just have the Rashi. The Gemara is the kasha. Rehuna said, Nistak is kosher, and the price is Sadik is possible. So the Mara says, two different types of cracks. One is Nizdak is kosher taka, but Sadik means it's the Ovid kehemnik. It looks like a hemnik. It's the Ovid, it appears like a hemnik. So a hemnik is not something with a lulav. A hemnik is something else out there. There's a thing out there called hemnik, and that thing, the lulav looks like that thing. So what is a hemnik? So Rashi tells us what a hemnik is. The other hemnik, Rashi has a French word for it. He thought that you know what this French word was. I wish we did. There's no other Rishon that touches it into the languages. There's one of the Rishonim touches into an Arabic word, which I don't know what that means. Thank you. One of the Rishonim that uses an Arabic word for it, but now Rashi gives us a few clues. Now, first of all, the fact that Rashi uses a French word for it, Rashi thought that you'd be able to walk down the streets of France and you'd find one. You would know what it looks like. So it was obviously something that was around in the days of Rashi. Why does Rashi say it was? Shel Barzel, it's made of iron. Shel Seifrim. So we're getting clues. It's made of iron. Seifrim use it. Sheesh Shnei Rashim has two ends. Roshi Echem Ufutzal. One side is split. Then Rashi says the lulav grew that way. Kach Godal Lulav. Rashi says the lulav grew that way. Godal. Mishru says, Mishru brings this also. Whether it grew, but he brings also if it happened later, if it happened off the tree. Mishru says, Halulav Kemin Shtei Shedres. Rashi says it's in the Shedra. Machtes Al Lakan. Machtes Al Lakan. Half the lulav's leaves are on this side. There's a split in the lulav and the shedra. Half the leaves on this side, half the leaves on that side. Okay, Rashi says that the hemnik is in the shedra, but we don't worry about the psalm in the shedra so much. Even though a lot of rishonim say that a lot of the psalm are only in the shedra, and according to them, there's no such thing as a pasul lulav. If the psulim lulav were in the shedra, like many rishonim, and Rashi goes that way, then there's no such thing as a pasul lulav. If the Rishonim, there are Rishonim that say that psui lulav only if they affect roiv of the alin of the lulav. If that was, if we went with that shita, again, we know such thing as a pasul lulav. We only have pasul lulav because we go with the shita of those Rishonim that the Ran and others, that the focus of the lulav is on the tiyamis, the center, with the one center. If we're dealing with the one center leaf, then we have issues with our lulav. Okay, so we're not going to deal with the second part of Rashi, because the second part of Rashi is the shita but the shedra. Let's deal with the first part. Rashi has its iron, its seifrim, and it has two heads. Now, the seifrim use it, so I have a simple thing. Let's go to a seifrim. Let's go to a seifer, and let's ask him, what is a hemnik? Unfortunately, the seifrim don't have hemniks nowadays. They don't use, at least if they do, they don't call it that. But it was something that was so common, so why didn't all the Rishonim say, go to your local Sefer and he'll show it to you? Now, but the Rishonim knew that there's a complicated issue with the Hemnik, because every Rishon who wrote on the topic drew a picture of it. Now, the pictures that we have today are all many, many generations later and totally unreliable. Maybe if you get some manuscript of a Rishon, you know, from a few hundred years ago, we can talk about what the picture might look like. But all the pictures today, the new Gemaras made new pictures, so whatever it is, you know, they came whatever they felt they could imagine it might look like. There is a Prima Gadim that translates this French word of Rashi, pointer, into a Yiddish word, a circle. A circle is a compass. We'll find out what a compass is in a minute. A kol ponim, Rashi says the seifrim have it. So we did a little digging, and it seems is that this is a tool that seifrim used up until about the year 1200. What year did Rashi die? 11 what? I can't hear you. I thought 1140. 1140, some say 1150. So, but he died
1105.
Okay, I'm not going to argue with you. Okay, anyway, so it appeared, but there's no trace of this tool. The only way they know it is that they see the use of it. What was this tool? The tool was a scoring tool. Today, the sefer today, if he wants to write sefer, he has to make sirtut. In those days, most of the writing was done on parchment. You had to do sirtut. You couldn't draw lines with ink first. It was very confusing. It would block you with this. But also, before the invention of India ink, ink spread. So if you drew a line with you made your lines with ink, you'd have a thick line. Every line with a thick line. It'd be impossible to read. It looked like some of these foreign languages they have. The Bangladesh, I think it is. One of the languages, like everything, all the words are like one block. It would be impossible to read. So they scored their papers with this. What they use today is they use a machine. Now they do sirta today. They have a machine. The sefteris thing is 42 lines, whatever it is. It's like a comb with those lines. They take it, they wipe it across the cloth, and they have all the lines done at once. That was the idea of the hemnik. The idea of the hemnik was that you can use the double point to make the top and bottom line at the same time. Okay, then they always came out evenly spaced. They always came out the same space between them. The problem was that if you wanted to write big letters on top of the page and small letters on the bottom of the page, or different pages, different names, you needed different hemniks for every size letter that you had. So that became a pain. So it wasn't as practical as it was made out to be. So it seems is that it disappeared. There's ways that the professionals figure out that such a tool existed, and they can tell from the manuscripts that up until about the year 1200 they had these type, they were in use in Europe, and they disappeared after that. So that makes sense why Rashi mentions it. He tells you can get it in your sefer, but the later Rishonim, like the Rosh and the Ran, never saw one. Okay, so what could we imagine the hemnik looks like? So I spoke to a fella out in Michigan who makes medieval implements, tools for movies and recreate, whenever they do, whatever they do, those that live in the anarchists, they're called, those people that live in the past. So he makes the tools for them. So this is one artist drew, based on our discussions, what one artist drew for me. This is actually based on a modern day compass, what a modern day compass looks like, a drafter's compass, not the kind of thing you use in elementary school for math, what a drafter's compass looks like. That's what, this is an artist who says, well, that's what we would use today, so he made it looking like this. But I don't like this picture because Rashi says it's made out of. But this fellow told me that the handle is guaranteed to be wood or bone. But I don't like the picture because Rashi says it's iron. So I asked somebody, another artist, to make it me a different one. Basically the same idea, made out of iron. But you get the point over here. The main thing we need to look at is not this side, which is. But we need to look at this side. What are we looking at over here? We're seeing is that it doesn't split like a, it doesn't just like, it's not a crack. Well, there's a space between it, and it turns out. It goes straight, and it turns out. Two things. First of all, there's a space over here, and it turns out. And both pictures are the same thing. Here also, see, it's straight, and it turns out, and there's a space between them. Those are seem to be the two features, key features of the hemnik. How much space? Every hemnik was different. If a sofer wanted to have big letters, he had big hemniks. If he wanted small letters, he had small hemniks. Okay, so now that we dealt with the sofer's hemnik, so what's with our hemnik? Let's watch the circle over there. What do you say to that one? Here, let's watch it. Now that we put an arrow there, I'll show you a little better. Let's go back to the circle. What do you say to that? Is that a hemnik? There's space, but it doesn't turn out. How about this one? This one here goes out. You mentioned the zigzag that you meant. Those zigzags come from the packaging. When they put the lulav into the crates, they package always the tips of the lulav facing inside, and the ends of the lulav. So they put, they take, let's say, 20 lulav, 10 are facing, the ten, they take 10 lulav, the tips facing up, 10 lulav, the tips facing down, they put them into each other, they wrap them together with the bottom sticking out and the tops inside the thing. But if you have way these things are shipped around, shipped and thrown, so sometimes the lulav loosen up. It's also, as the lulav dry in the shipping, they dry out, so the ropes and things that used to tie, they're not so tight anymore, the lulav can slide. If a case falls, the lulav is going to slide, and that's what you're going to get. You can take an iron, and you can straighten it out. How, what are these, what would you say with this one here? Is that a hemnik? How about this one? Let's go back. So all these things, the people who are going to tell you, guaranteed a hemnik. The people who tell you, no, that's not a hemnik. I can't tell you. In real life, when it comes in front of you, you have to make a decision. These things always, they could look different. You know, these are magnified how many times? In real life, it might be a lot smaller. It might look, the space might look insignificant. The tip, the term might look insignificant. You have to see in real life. These are. You know, you use pictures of lighting and everything to make it come out. You should see it. What would be if in real life? I don't know. This is the biggest problem facing the modern consumer. Deciding on these type of openings, if that's a hemnik or not. There's very few of the other halachas in Shulchan Aruch that are negei bizman hazeh, because everything else is weeded out before you get to it. And the guy on the field has to know more. But on the real, when you get to the table, there's very few you have to know. You just have to be able to decide if this is a hemnik or not. That's all you have to, it's really what you have to decide. And there's one important rule you have to know. The longer you look, the wider the space will be. Rav David says, you have 1 second to look, just like the Sefer Torah, if you have a hole or a drop of ink in a Sefer Torah. Yeah, you can spend 10 minutes looking, you're not going to know any better. You have 1 second to look. The first look that you get, that's where you decide whether that's considered a hole for Mukhov Gvil or a dot for Mukhov Gvil or something. You have 1 second to look at it. You have 1 second to look. And you also have to hold it at an arm's length, the same way you'd hold it if you're using, just like a Sefer Torah, like the Rambam says, you put the Sefer Torah on the bima and you stand straight as if you're reading it, and whatever it is, it's like a foot or 18 inches between your eyes and the thing. The same thing would be true of the lulav. If you hold it the same way, about 6 inches, 8 inches from your face, the same thing. You look at it one time, and then you know. After that, you're imagining. Okay. Are you asking now about the Magen Avraham by Sefer Torah?
No, about the hemnik.
The hemnik?
Yeah.
because the space is not the, was not the point of it. It was the shape that the Rosh Hashanah was talking about. If there was, if the space, if the distance of the space was important, the Shem should have said that. They all draw the shape to show you what the shape is supposed to be. Is that the shape is important? You have to know, but they don't. They don't tell you how much space. It's the open, as long as you have space inside, it's the avit kehemnik. It's the shape of a hemnik. Here, look at more. So a few more. Love them. Here, so let's go back. You see, you know, this is the same ones. Here. Oh, sorry. I thought it was another thing. Okay. There's another pshat in Kavatz with the thorns. Rashi says Rashi's gear says Kuvav Tzadi Pishkunji Yitzim Shedrish Lai Uktim Men Kaitzim of Arach Pirish Inyan Tzmisa or Tzmisa Shrivel. The Rebbeinu Chananel even has the gears like that. Kavatz, that was his gearsa. Okay, you're not going to see this in the market today, but let's take a look at what you were asking before. What would you say with this lulav here or this one? These are not shriveled. These are, as I said before, a lulav that got banged up in the shipping. That's not what the Shem are talking about. Okay, there's a long piece of Gemara. Nechlakat Yemis. Nechlakat Yemis is the second most common issue on the lulav. No, but as you see it's split. Nachal Gat Yemis. The Gemara asks, what's the din of Nachal Gat Yemis? The bottom line is that Amir Yerich Meshav Levi Nachal Gat Yemis Nasek Mishin Nizlot Yemis Apostle. And that's how the Mechaber Paskins. The question is how much Nachlak, and again, the Mechaber brings a bunch of shittas, whether it means all of these are the lulav or Roiv of the Yemis. There's a lot of shittas in that. But let's first watch that happen over here. Here, we're going to split that for you. That was just a shtick. I didn't make the slide, but somebody gave it to me, so I used it. And we'll have it now on a real lulav. You watch, there's a line that's going to go down over there. Alright, see, that's a real lulav, it's split. Okay. So, what do you do with that? We have a bunch of shittas. A mashihu, a tefach, rubai, kuloi, into the shedra, rev kalal, these are all the shittas. Okay. So Mishru says you should try to get something which is totally sealed, a mashu of split. But now we're not talking about a hemnik type of split. A hemnik type of split is, it doesn't say, and it doesn't say a share. So Mishru says you have to be very careful with it. Mishru warns that you have to, I think his question is, these are the harbe or something like that, or something along those lines. That's Mishru's words. That you very care, you have to be very, very particular about the hemnik split. This, it's a split. The lulav looks whole, and how you test for that? You take your finger, you put it on top of the lulav, and you jiggle it a little bit. And if it wasn't split until now, you just split it. It always works. Every time you use your finger there, you'll always see it split. To the best of your abilities, never touch the TMS. Once you bring it home and it's your business, do whatever you want with it. As long as it's in the store and it belongs to the owner, and somebody else doesn't have to buy it. Never touch the tiyamis. Okay, so there's a bunch of shiurim, a bunch of shittas. If it's kulay into the shed, we say it's possible. Kulay also probably possible. Rubai also mishmur is not so happy with, but at least it should be mashu or tefach you can get away with. What is this? So here, I think that this is a split for us. These are on a split. So how much is that? That's, I don't know, maybe that's that right. It's the same move from the other side. Same move, just the second side. Is that right? That was probably right on this leaf. I don't remember the original leaf, how big it was, but we're going to imagine it was more than a tefach, and it was probably right. Okay, so these splits are around. You can. It's very common to find these splits that are not hemniks, because they don't turn out.
How do you know the difference between a hemnik and a hemnik? Is it a hemnik that
it's grown
like that, but a split?
Rashi says that it grows. Mishmur says even if it didn't grow, even if it happened later. Mishmur says even if it happened later. Okay, so, would you ask me?
How do you know the difference between a nistak and a hemnik?
So, what's the difference between a nistak and a hemnik? That is the a key question to understanding these halachas. And if anybody who knows the real answer deserves a $1 million prize. Because if you look in Shulchan Aruch, there are pages and pages in Shulchan Aruch trying to figure out the difference. And all the Paiskim, they spend a tremendous amount of time. The Paiskim say there is no difference. The Paiskim say there's a big, major difference. If we knew clearly the answer, but I wouldn't just say it had Mishavur sums it up in short and sweet. The difference between a Nizdak and a Hemdak is that a Nizdak is something like this, where it doesn't, there's a mashul crack, there's no real space over there, these are enlarged, don't remember, these are super enlarged, and they don't open, they don't separate. There's no turning. If you go back to the pictures of the hemniks, all pictures I chose are all things where the hemnik, where the leaves turn out. The leaves turn out. They go straight, they turn. These never turn. And that's the key, that's a key thing in knowing the difference. The leaves of a hemnik turn out, and the leaves of a non-hemnik go straight. Probably that's the most essential thing to know. Alright, here we have these are more shittas of the I thought I took this out. More shittas of the Nachlak. Okay, Chadhutza. Chadhutza is the forgotten halacha. You're watching the video. I didn't know that started already. Let's see if I can stop that. Chadhutza is the forgotten halacha. It gets one word in the Gemara, and it gets one line in Shulchan Aruch, and we never think about it. We never think about it. It's not one of the things on the list of things that we talk about and show. Oh, here's the problem. So the simple, some of the Shem learn that leaves a lulav go only on one side of the shedra. You're not going to find that in the store. Every lulav leaf is supposed to be doubled. That's the facts. That's the way they grow. The tiyamis is also supposed to be doubled. Sometimes the tiyamis is not doubled. I have theories why, but I never tested them out in the field, so it will consider them just a theory. Sometimes the tiyamis really is doubled, but the leaf is so thin, much thinner than the rest of the little lulav, that you think it's not doubled. What this fellow in this picture here is doing is he separated the leaf, and he's going to try to figure out if the tiyamis is doubled or not. Okay, let's see what he does. He has the leaf separated already. He has a pin in his hand, and he's trying to get it inside the leaf. If he can get it into the leaf and he can open the leaf, you know it's not doubled. You try this yourself at home, you guarantee it's possibly a little. But you can watch him do it. He does a pretty good job. Now he's going to open up all the way to show you that he opened it. Okay? This is one of the leaves that probably looked like in the store that it was single, but he's able to demonstrate and show that it is. Sometimes you think it's doubled because you see lines on the lulav, you see folds, and those lines are really, really creases. Folds, creases in the lulav leaf. And sometimes it's just traces of color that are left behind. Okay. It's very rare. Since I learned this test, that's some 10, 12 years ago, maybe more than that, since I learned a test like this, I never found a tiyamis that was clear out a chadhutza, unless there was a story to it, which is why I have theories of what a chadhutza might have been. One second. Did I skip something? I thought I had. What time is it? I'm over time already.
48.
Here, let's look at this one. No. Here, let's look at this one here. The top of this leaf. This is these two leaves together are the tiamis. These two leaves together are the tiamis. This side is a little higher than that. Would you call that a chadhutza? Sometimes we have them. I think he separates it. There. How about that one? You call this a chadhutza. So the place can talk about this. The Shulchan Aruch Rav is the main one talks about it, and they all take it from there. As long as the two leaves, or whatever one, the smaller one overlaps the larger one, roiv, you're good. Usually when they overlap, sometimes you have it when one's a little bit taller, sometimes one's a little wider, sometimes both are a problem, tall and wide are the problem, but most of the time it will be roiv. On rare instances, you'll see that there's a fold. It's a fold of leaf, and it clearly does not cover the roif. And those cases that would be possible, and it's something to keep in mind. It's something to keep in mind. When you see it, you'll notice it. You just have to know to look out for it. No, you won't have a question that this is what we discussed. Yes, it will clearly be that this is what we discussed. When it's not roif, it will be clear. But you just have to look out for it. Okay, that was the last slide. There's one other thing I want to talk about. Let's go back and go to the wrap. Here. This one. Here. The shedras before tvachim. The first vialacha has a question. The hadasim have to be three tvachim. So they have to be three tvachim covered with leaves. Aravas do not need to be three tvachim covered with leaves. So the Miralacha wants to know, what's about the lulav? Poskim don't talk about the lulav. What's about the lulav? Does lulav need to be four tvachim of leaves, or not four tvachim of leaves? So here we have a lulav shedra, four tvachim, and here we have one where there's a leaf missing on the bottom over there. Why did that leaf go? Maybe he cut the lulav, that leaf fell off. Maybe that he pulled one off to make a leaf, to make a ring, I mean. You don't have four tvachim of leaves. So Mishvura, the Miralacha plays around with it. It's the first Miralacha in Hilchas Lulav. Plays around with it a little bit, and he's, in the end he says, Sarachi, and he doesn't know. Some of the contemporaries found that some of you come to Shainim, that talk, they seem to talk about this, and they want to say it's possible, but the Bialocha ends Sarachi. Okay, I think we'll end with that. Okay, so thank you very much for coming. Anybody has more to hear, wants to hear more on the topic, I have the books. It says everything that we talk about for Kitzer. And much, much more, obviously. I do love Mesraim with Asma Ravis. And I have other things on Pesach and